This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company. On this Tuesday, Dave Callum and Dave Tindall ready and raring to go to take you through the BMW Championship and the UK Championship on the European Tour as well, with the focus being on the second event of the FedEx Cup playoffs, the BMW this week. And Dave Tindall joins me live now on Skype. Good morning to you, Dave Tindall.
Hello Dave, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, good after last week. It went quite well, didn't it?
You're in flying form, aren't you? 2 weeks we brought the podcast back for the PGA Championship. You tipped up Colin Morikawa, and then last week nailed Dustin Johnson at 20-1, Dave, suggesting that he should have been around about 12-14-1 alongside the likes of Justin Thomas and John Rahm in the market. And you couldn't have been more right last week with Dustin Johnson just dominant at the Northern Trust. That was a scintillating performance from Dustin Johnson, winning by 11. Should have shot a 59, shot a 60, closed with 63-64 at the weekend. It was a masterclass from tee to green, and he was hot on the putting surfaces as well. It was a complete performance from Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, he's and we had Webb Simpson as well, didn't we, each way?
So yeah.
That worked out well. Yeah, DJ, once he's got hot putter, that's a pretty dangerous combination, isn't it, with all the other parts of his game. Obviously, the putter holds him back a fair bit. But he put it so well at Harding Park, and then he brought that to TPC Boston. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who were unhappy that he should win an event with 30 under, but, I mean, if he'd won by one, it would be 20 under, wouldn't it? So, which we see quite often. I can remember is it the Century Tournament of Champions? That's been won with 31. I remember Ernie Els won that with 31 under. But again, that was an eight-stroke win. And Jordan Spieth won that same tournament at 30 under, again by 8 strokes. So sometimes the runaway victor slightly sort of confuses the picture a little bit. I mean, that is a birdie course, but that was just sort of a freak performance, wasn't it? You saw people like Justin Thomas on Twitter saying, "What course? What have you done?" sort of thing.
Yeah, I think you look at the stats, don't you? And it was the best strokes gained performance for a decade. It was the biggest winning margin since the Bell South Classic back in 2006 when Phil Mickelson won. So he dominated. Not only the opposition, but dominated the golf course last week. And some have come out and said it's a playoff event, it shouldn't be won with 30 under par. But the next best was 19 under par. And as you mentioned, if he'd won by one last week, you might not have had people saying, this is ridiculous. You just got to enjoy the performance for 1 week. And Dustin Johnson was, whether or not he can reproduce that this week, it doesn't matter. He was just in a league of his own last week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, as I said at the time, I don't quite know why he was that price, because he'd finished runner-up at the PGA, he'd won the Travellers. So he was in some excellent form, and he was longer in the market than Rory McIlroy, who can't do anything at the minute. So, yeah, sometimes a price sticks out, and it seems good, and then it actually does prove to be good.
He's not that price this week. He's 8-1 favourite for the BMW Championship. Here at William Hill, by the way, we're top price guaranteed on the top 20 in the market. Plus, we are paying 6 places this week as well with the 70 runners. DJ is 8-1. John Rahm, 10-1. Justin Thomas, 14s. Bryson DeChambeau is 14-1. Xander Schauffele, 18-1. Rory McIlroy, 18-1. Webb Simpson, 20-1. Colin Morikawa is 22s. Daniel Berger, 22-1. Jason Day, 28-1. Patrick Reed is 30s, Patrick Cantlay is 33s, along with Tony Finau, and it's 35-1 and bigger the rest. Let's start with Dustin Johnson this week, Dave. We attempted at 8-1 because he's won back-to-back twice in the past 4 years, so he won't be concerned about going back-to-back, DJ. It's not something that will scare him this week, and looks to be a good setup for him, the course as well, and talk more about the course in a few moments' time. But were you tempted by Dustin Johnson at 8-1?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was sort of in my head thinking 13-2 and everyone will just want to duck him. But 8-1, you want to leave some chips on the table. If you've backed him last week, I think you can do that at 8-1 with Dustin Johnson because, as you said, we'll come on to it. But I think it's not like this course is a course that he hasn't played well on this type of course, because I think I'm going to liken it to Harding Park a little bit, where he's just finished runner-up in the USPGA as well. So it's not like he's going to something completely different to last week or where he's played well in recent times. So, yeah, he can pile it on again as far as I'm concerned. I won't be putting him up at 8-1, but I couldn't put anyone off, put it that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Pretty much a similar assessment on Dustin Johnson's chance this week at 8-1. This is the first time I'll have seen Olympia Field, so I'm looking forward to this week. It's in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm hoping you'll be able to give me a little bit of insight into how the course will play this week as well, Dave, because the only relatively recent event we've seen this course host was the 2015 US Amateur. That's match play, and Bryson DeChambeau won. And if you go back to 2003, Jim Furyk won the US Open at Olympia Fields with a winning total of 8 under par. The course is a long par 70, measures just under 7,400 yards on the scorecard. And that's still pretty long by modern day standards. And the greens are basically a mix of bent and Poana. There's a north and south course on the property, but for tournament play, they'll be using the north course. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because some people on Twitter have been highlighting the Illinois Fighting Championship, I think it's called, which is an NCAA event, collegiate golf. And the likes of Matthew Wolf, Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland have had good results in those tournaments as well. So there is a bit of course form to go on, but I don't know how it's going to shape up with regards to analysing this championship this week, Dave.
Yeah, when I first saw it was at this course, it sort of brought back some good memories, because I remember backing Furyk at 33-1 when he won that US Open there. And it was a time when the US Open was more what people think it is now, which isn't anymore, where, you know, you have to be really straight.
Yeah.
And you know, nudge it around and be accurate. And Furyk totally fitted the bill back then. So I thought, oh, we're back to maybe in that kind of course. But the more I've read, the more I don't think it's going to be that at all, really. I mean, on the card, it's what, 7,366?
Yeah.
You said, yeah, par 70. I mean, that's long for a par 70. And then I dug out some quotes from the 2015 US Amateur, and you got a number of players saying, you know, I'm Ryan Ruffles, I'm one of the longer hitters, that's a demanding course off the tee. You've got other players saying, you know, it's going to play hard and long. Robbie Shelton, who's in the field this week, actually, isn't he? Robbie Shelton, if you're looking for an outsider.
He played well last week, didn't he?
Yeah. So it seems to be that this is, you know, you need to hit it long and straight off the tee, because there's also reports of a lot of rough. Obviously, DeChambeau won the US Amateur there, which would make you then think long is the game. I know he's become like ludicrously long, but he wasn't exactly a short hitter back when he won that.
Yeah.
Looking at some of his driving distance sort of end of year rankings in his early career, and he's, you know, 25th, 40th. He's up there with the longer ones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would.
So you're leaning off the tee, are you, Dave, then? If you're looking to put a statistic to
fair
it.
Enough. Yeah, strokes going off the tee. So, which is what I did at Harding Park, because that was also a par 70. It was shorter in yardage, but because it was so heavy, the San Francisco air, and the ball didn't fly, I think it played probably similar in length to this week. So I think, yeah, I think if you can get it out there off the tee and straight, so strokes going off the tee is an important one for me this week.
Yeah, I can see that as well. I was leaning heavily on that particular statistic, and it will be interesting to see how it plays, because the rough is reportedly 5 inches thick, and finding fairways, we hear this a lot, don't we? Finding fairways will be important. We'll see if that plays out throughout the course of the 4 days at this championship as well. I've got a couple of picks this week. How many have you got, Dave?
Yeah, two as well.
Okay, I'll let you lead off because you're the hot hand at the moment.
I'm going to go with Cameron Champ.
Okay.
at 80-1, and that's a nice, really nice price on Cameron Champ, who obviously I've touched on some of this reasoning already. He's ranked second this year in strokes gained off the tee, so I think that's an ideal skill for this particular track. He led, didn't he? He was one of the leaders on the final day at the USPGA. I mean, that's some effort.
Yeah.
At this stage in his career in the majors. And he's won twice already. He doesn't quite get thrown in, does he? Because maybe he's like a different year group, but he doesn't quite get thrown in with Morikawa, Wolf and Hovland. And yet he's got two wins and has led in the final round of a major. So I don't quite know why he's 80s and there. Half that price, almost quarter that price in terms of Morikawa. So I think that's a little bit unfair. It makes lots of birdie. I'm looking at his birdie stats. Because he's a long hitter, you might think, oh, he just needs four par fives. Well, he doesn't. He's actually better making birdies on par four, so that's quite good. And then the one that really added, I mean, I was liking him already. And then, as you said, the Fighting Illini Invitational, that collegiate event, he won one of them. In 2016, when he was at Texas, opened with a 65 and won that. And so obviously he's got, that's only four years ago, so he's got an edge at a golf course that you would have thought's just new to everyone, or maybe just a few of the old timers know, but he's had recent success there. I know it's obviously at a different level, but it's got to help, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So you put that all together with how he's playing at the minute. He did miss the cut, didn't he, after his great performance at Harding Park. But that's what happens, isn't it? Any player in the world can do that. You're in contention in a big event and then you can't quite get it going the next time you start. But as we see with these things, it doesn't take long for it to come back. And I think this is an obvious place where he can show his skills again. I thought 80-1 was very acceptable.
80-1 Cameron Champ then, Dave's first selection here. I'm going with that Harding Park link as well. I do like that as a maybe a course correlation this week. And I like Tony Finau actually this week at 33-1. I do respect DJ, Justin Thomas and John Rahm at the top of the market, but I like Tony Finau each way. Obviously it's been well documented that he's only won once and that was a low grade event as well, but he missed the cut last week. That was nothing to do with his long game, which again was in good order. And looking at this course, I'm leaning heavily on long game this week. And Finau's ranked 23rd off the tee and 17th in approach this season, and I think Harding Park is going to be a good guide. Finau finished 4th there, did very little wrong at Harding Park in the PGA Championship, and I think he's always worth a look in events where scoring is likely to be tougher. I think it's bound to be tougher than last week at TPC Boston, and on a long course I want someone that's decent off the tee and can give it a bit of a biff, and Finau fits that bill, and he's got good event form too. I'm not sure that will count for that much this week, but it could be something to draw on, as this tournament's often played in this part of the United States as well. So I thought Finau at 33-1 on the back of the missed cut last week was pretty fair, so I'll play him each way this week, Tony Finau.
Yeah, he's someone I looked at, and yeah, sometimes you feel you've got to justify yourself, haven't you, when you pick Tony Finau.
Yeah.
Everyone will just throw in the obvious, well, he never wins sort of thing. But yeah, if you keep backing him at 33s and bigger in big events, he's absolutely capable.
Yeah, he pays his way, doesn't he? He does definitely pay his way.
Absolutely, yeah, he totally pays his way. And then you think just one of them, by law of averages, he'll either stumble over the line or he'll get a break at some point or hit a great shot. So, yeah, you keep backing him at that price all day, really. My second pick, again, we're going back to the USPGA. I'm going for Matthew Wolf.
Yeah, I can 40s. See him going well. He's got good form in the Midwest, hasn't he? Which is interesting as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and if I'm leaning on strokes gained off the tee, then he just absolutely comes into focus. He was second in that category at the PGA, struck it brilliantly off the tee, gained over seven strokes. And then even though he didn't finish as well last week, he was still seventh strokes gained off the tee at the Northern Trust. And to be honest, that was just one daft round. He threw in a 77 in round three. But you look at his other round scores, 65 on day one and a pair of 67s in round two and four. So that was a continuation of his good form. And he's kind of shown, I think his first success came in Birdie Fest. at the Rocket Mortgage, where he was also second this year. And you're thinking, well, can he play the tougher ones? And yeah, he can, as he showed in the PGA. So he's got all the sort of that kind of thing. And again, he's got this extra through playing in the collegiate golf there, where he won an event there just 2 years ago, beat Morikawa. They were the 1-2. So again, he's coming back to a course where, I mean, that's part of the reason why I backed Morikawa, wasn't it, at the US PGA, because he'd played that course that no one really knew.
Yeah.
In his college days and recently. So again, here we are, Wolf's going to go back there. Again, you don't quite know the lack of crowds. Is that helping these youngsters? I sort of buying into that a little bit, because it's back to college times when they used to just play with no crowd. So they're not missing them, are they? So you're getting a lot of younger winners. So Wolf's just got a lot going for him. And at 40s, that was enough to get me involved, because I think he's really stepped it up a level. I mean, that USPGA, he could have kicked a couple of shots clear at one point, couldn't he? He missed a couple of golden chances when he pulled right up to the leaders. So, I mean, still to finish fourth was a great effort. He's a hot player, returning to a course he knows and does well on.
40-1 Matthew Wolf, Dave's second selection. I'm going to take a bit of a flyer with my last pick here. I'm going to go with Brian Harman at 125-1. I've just been very impressed with the way he's played the last 2 weeks at the Wyndham and last week at the Northern Trust. And I get the feeling he could be a bit of a sleeper this week. If it is a bomber's paradise, he might struggle. But he has performed well at some very long courses in the past, most notably when chasing home Brooks Koepka in the US Open back at Erin Hills in 2017. As an added bonus, that's not too far away geographically from this week's venue at Olympia Fields. He ranked 8th tee to green on route to 11th place finish last week to cement his spot in this field. And those stats last week include a disastrous round 3 as well. The rest of the week, he only missed 4 fairways, picked up 10 strokes tee to green. That's elite level ball striking from Brian Harman. And I thought if he carries that over to this week, he might just run into a place at a massive price. So Brian Harman, my second selection at 125 here, Dave.
Yeah, I had a little look at him, but I did notice he's not had a top 10 for a year.
Yeah.
Sorry to pour water on you. But
he was 11th last week, though.
He's 11th last week. And if you're looking for kind of time of year, he did play well at this time of year. Last year, he was 6th at the Wyndham and 4th at Greenbrier. They sort of bridge dogs in September. So maybe he's running into some form, Brian Harman.
Quick line on a few of the guys at the top of the betting. We've spoken enough about Dustin Johnson. John Rahm was brilliant off the tee last week, and he's got a very, very similar profile to when he won at Memorial in terms of his build-up to this event.
Yeah, and he made the quarterfinals of the US Amateur here, 2015, so he knows a bit about the course. Thought 10's...
skinny enough for you?
Skinny enough, yeah.
Justin Thomas, 14-1. He putted abysmally last week, but he's been known to bounce back from bad putting weeks in the past and then produce the week after.
Yeah, at 14, any course for Justin Thomas at 14s, he's capable of winning. I thought DeChambeau was just a little bit bigger than I thought he might be, given that it's probably well known that he won the US Amateur there. He's 14s as well. I mean, he led as well, didn't he, in the final round of the USPGA? He was one up there.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind that he'd never done anything in a major before, that was clearly a step up. So I thought he might be 12s, or might be near a Rahm's price.
And Xander Schauffele, he always looks underpriced in the market to me nowadays. I think we talked about this last week? I don't know if we did.
Exactly, yeah. That, yeah.
At 18-1.
It does. I mean, it's a course that should really suit him, but I don't know. I've got some mental block on him that I can't possibly back him unless he's 25s.
Oh, I just think he's short at 18-1. He's alongside Rory McIlroy. McIlroy's been vocal. I watched an interview with him after the Northern Trust about he's almost just phoning it in at the moment. He's not really focused, Dave. But I think this could be a big week for McIlroy. I was tempted by 18-1 just to, on price grounds more than anything else, because his iron play was really good last week, and his driving and putting was an element in which he struggled. Putting has been a problem historically for McIlroy in recent history anyway, but the driving is something that I'd expect him to rectify for this week. I can see McIlroy going well this week at 18-1.
Yeah, I mean, with people like him, if you just take the idea that these guys are too good to be down for long, I mean, this is why Dustin Johnson's been big prices, because people thought he wasn't quite at it. And yeah, then he won the Travelers at, what, about 25, 28. And I remember Brooks Koepka, everyone thought, oh, well, he's doing nothing. And then he nearly won at 33s at St Jude. So if you let these guys, if you write them off, it's daft, and they do. I don't know. I think if I'd seen Rory at 20s this week, my eyes would have sort of lit up. Maybe 18s is like one eye's lit up. But, yeah, he's capable, isn't he, of just turning it on?
Yeah, I can see him going well this week, 18-1, McIlroy. Any other standout for you, Dave? The list that I've got included McIlroy and Justin Thomas, and then the two players you've picked were on my shortlist, Matthew Wolff and Cameron Champ at 40s and 80s respectively, so happy you've gone with them. Who else do you want to mention, Dave?
Yeah, Jason Day at 28s. It'd be like a third pick if I put in a third pick. Just this idea that he had that run of top sevens, wasn't it, not so long back, and just because he's had a bad week, I think underlying it all, he's playing really well. So he's drifted out to 28s, when again he was kind of the flavour of the month, wasn't he, a couple of weeks ago, and now he's 28s to win this, and this is a tournament, although he won at Conway Farms, I mean, he's won this before and finished fourth in two of the last three that he's contested, so no surprise at all if Jason Day bounces back big time. I thought Russell Henley as well is one that's his putters started to come to the table a bit. I mean, he was driving everyone mad a bit because everything else was looking fine, but he couldn't putt. But he's gained over three strokes with the putter the last couple of weeks. That's helped him finish ninth and eighth. And then was runner-up at the John Deere on his last trip to Illinois. I thought he's got a fair bit going for him if you want to play someone around, what is he about?
70 to 1, yeah.
Yeah. Apart from that, the only one that I wasn't sure on was Paul Casey at 50s. I mean, he plays so well.
Yeah,
I can't quite believe he's not 33s or something.
Yeah, I can see Casey going
but
well.
But do you think
that
week was a one-week only deal?
Maybe it could have been a one-week only deal, because around that he's not played well. He was a massive price, wasn't he, for the PGA Championship on the basis of the form that he'd shown leading up to the event at Harding Park, and then it's kind of declined since then, hasn't it, for Casey? A little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, I know when he was doing well there, I thought, oh, well, that sort of makes sense because he's one of the great off the tee players.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, if that's going to be the key metric here, then he could come back into focus, couldn't he?
Now, I'll be really interested to see how those guys that have just been incredible since lockdown ended play this week. The likes of Scotty Scheffler, who's 35-1, Harris English, who's 35-1, and Daniel Berger, 22-1. No player's gained more strokes in total than Daniel Berger since February. He's found his place in the market, I think, finally, hasn't he, Daniel Berger, alongside the likes of Morikawa and Simpson?
Yeah, I must admit that, I don't know, in this sort of field, Berger at 22s.
That's not appealing, is it?
It's not right, is it?
No, well, he's not the same class as Morikawa or Simpson, is he?
No, and you look back in a year's time and think, Daniel Berger was 22s in this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd be surprised.
Do you not rate him as highly as other people do then? Because remember, he was, I think, was he Rookie of the Year when Justin Thomas came out on tour? He had that wrist problem in 2018. Yeah. A lot of people think this is his rightful place alongside the likes of Morikawa and Simpson. I'm kind of with you. I said that's his rightful place in the market. Personally, I think it's too short in the market, but you couldn't have him much bigger, could you, the way he's performed?
No, I mean, he's got, what, five top fours in about his last seven starts. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I really liked him at the USPGA, where, again, he played well. He was 13th there. But I just can't have 22s. I don't know. It's sometimes when you watch him, maybe that puts you off and you think, he's just not as good as the rest, is he? But, I mean, it's the numbers on the cards that count, and he's a superb, but not for me, 22s.
Okay, let's talk about the other event very quickly as well, the ISPS Handy UK Championship at the Belfry. Wide open the betting for this. Rasmus Højgaard is the 14-1 favourite. Matt Wallace, Matthias Schwab, Hao Tong Lee, all 16-1. Andy Sullivan, 18-1, along with Bernd Wiesberger. Gavin Green is 20s. Lee Westwood, 22s, along with Danny Willett. Martin Keimer, Victor Perez, both 25s. Jordan Smith is 30s, 33-1, and bigger the rest. And it's a stronger field than we've become accustomed to in the UK swing with this event at the Belfry. And given it's the last event of the UK swing, those that failed in their quest to make it into the top 70 in the FedEx Cup race have... some of them have decided to make the trip to the Belfry this week. It's a par 72 measuring 7,233 yards. And we last saw it in tournament play in the British Masters back in 2008. Nowadays, you seem to have the Belfry advertisers that, you know, mini break for golfers, don't you? A couple of nights at the Belfry with bed and breakfast. But it is it's a historic venue, isn't it?
Yeah, is it? Being used for the Ryder Cup more than any other course, I think, four times. I played it 3 or 4 years ago.
There's different courses, isn't there?
Far too hard for me, because I couldn't... sometimes these courses, you think, oh, well, I'll make the odd par, and I just couldn't do anything on it. I found the greens so difficult, because they're sort of slopey and on tiers, and I was just putting off them. Couldn't get it right at all. You look at the past winners there, and there's some big names, so it tends to go to a well-known name. I must admit, I'm finding this week harder than last week in terms of finding good bets.
Yeah.
And that certainly applies to this week. I mean, look, it's a confused market, isn't it, with so many. There's about 10 players between 14s and 22s, and you can find holes in all of them quite easily.
It's interesting that a youngster like Højgaard is at the top of the betting. That seems short to me at 14-1. I know he's in outstanding form, but still.
Well, he was going off at 100-1 about four starts ago, wasn't he? So it's like, how do you price this one up? There's a couple of angles, and this will lead me to my bet. Actually, I was just looking at the local angle. Robert Rock used to be affiliated the Belfry. Matt Wallace is now actually at 16s, but I'm going to pick another guy from the region and go for Andy Sullivan at 18s.
Yeah, I can see him going well.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm not suggesting that's a great price or anything, but I've read a bit of stuff. He went to the Belfry at the 2002 Ryder Cup, so he's got all the kind of backstory, which is good. And without knowing definitively, I'm pretty sure he must have played it loads of times. He's from Nuneaton, I think, isn't he? And the Belfry's the big course in the air. I'm sure he's played it loads of times. And just that he's got that recent win under his belt. And
it was dominant as well, wasn't it, that win?
Yeah, it was great, that win. And when he did win, was it 2015? He won quickly, didn't he, soon after? Mm. So I think he's a player, when he does win the English Championship two starts ago, when he does get hot, it's worth keeping him on side. If you look at the British Masters as well, he was fourth. So last three appearances on English soil, where he's from, got a win and a fourth.
Yeah.
So I think he's had in all his local ties and Belfry knowledge. I think there's a fair chance he'll be right up there again.
Yeah, he could be favourite this week, I think, Andy Sullivan, 18-1.
Yeah, I mean, look at his tee to green stats. They're phenomenal. He's gained 29 strokes tee to green in the last two events. I mean, that's crazy. He put it dreadfully last time, but I'm hoping he'll know a bit about these greens. And, you know, I don't think he'll be looking to hole every putt, but I think he'll know enough maybe to avoid the three putts.
Very good. Andy Sullivan, the selection for Dave in the UK Championship at 18-1. That about wraps us up here. So we'll get your selections for the BMW Championship, Dave. Two picks there?
Yeah, so I'll go a point each way on both Cameron Champ at 80-1 and Matthew Wolff at 40-1.
Yeah, I'm going to go a point each way on Tony Finau at 33-1 and half a point each way on Brian Harman at 125-1. And your selection in the UK Championship is?
Yeah, just a point each way on Andy Sullivan at 18s. I'm not sort of shouting that one from the rooftops, but hopefully he can give us a run.
Yeah, hopefully so. Dave, you've been in absolutely scintillating form on this golf podcast since it returned, and we'll be looking forward to Eastlake next week, won't we? The final event, the Tour Championship in the FedEx Cup playoffs, and we're down to 30 runners next week as well.
Yeah, one thing I was going to ask you, if you've had a bet on the money list, how does that work? Because like the Masters is, what's the Masters count for in the US Open?
I think they're in this year's money list, I believe, but don't quote me on that, Dave. I think they're officially, like, the season officially ends, doesn't it, at Eastlake? Yeah. But I think those two events, the US Open and the Masters, will count for this year's money list, but I'm guessing to a certain extent. I'm not sure, Dave.
It seems a logical answer, doesn't it? Because they can't count twice, you wouldn't have thought.
You wouldn't have thought so, would you? I think they must be included in this year's money list, but
yeah,
I'm not 100% sure on that.
It's good though, isn't it? I can't wait. It's like, well, we've finished at the Tour Championship.
Yeah.
We've got two majors to come.
Yeah, we've basically got quality golf up until December, haven't we now?
Yeah.
Which is fantastic because obviously we missed a lot of it during lockdown, but for the Masters and the US Open at Wingfoot to be rescued, it just means we've got wall-to-wall golf, doesn't it, basically? Which is good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you for your company, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do follow us on Twitter at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. Drop us a retweet if you like the podcast as well. And we've brought this back and hopefully you're enjoying it. So you can check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app. And don't forget, at the BMW Championship here at William Hill, we're top price guaranteed on the top 20. Plus, we are paying six places here with William Hill as well. Dustin Johnson heads the betting at 8-1. Check out the full range of markets at williamhill.com and online. And if you're having the bets this week with William Hill, the very best of luck. And myself and Dave, we will be back next week for the Tour Championship here at William Hill. Good luck and enjoy the golf this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.